Hey there, welcome back to America Weekend with your pal Valerie Smaldone. I want to tell you a little story. Recently, just a week or so ago, I produced and hosted an event at a beautiful new event space in New York City called the Sheen Center for Thought and Culture. And it's on Bleecker Street, if you know the New York area. The Sheen Center is this wonderful building that houses all kinds of very interesting art opportunities, whether it's dance or music or a theatrical performance or conversation. I have a new series called Hitmakers, where I interview well-known musicians about their life, their career, and the individual, the artist, then does a little bit of a performance. Nothing big, usually very unplugged, not a lot of instrumentation, in a very intimate space at the Sheen Center in their Black Box Theater. The Black Box Theater is this really gorgeous, state-of-the-art, small space where it feels very clubby, but everything is brand new. There's the opportunity to buy some wine or beer and snacks and really enjoy being in a very intimate space with a well-known artist and me, the interviewer. So in my second installment of Hitmakers at the Sheen Center, I had the pleasure of interviewing Carmine Appice. Carmine is one of the best rock drummers ever. He has played with everybody, including Rod Stewart, Ozzy Osbourne, Jeff Beck, Cactus, Vanilla Fudge. We're going way back into the 60s. And Carmine is still playing. He's still teaching. He does drum clinics. He tours. Very, very well-known drummer in the world, and certainly well known by other musicians. Carmine has a new book out. It's his autobiography. It's raw, it's real, it's as down to earth as you can possibly be. He tells the truth about everything in his life, including his early days in Brooklyn, his family, his brothers, and then the crazy world of rock and roll, including sex and drugs and the fame portion of rock and roll. Carmine and I sat down before our interview on stage at the Sheen Center, and we had a little conversation about his book and why he started in this business anyway. Carmine, this is your autobiography. First time ever writing a book about your life?
Uh-huh. Yeah, the only other book I wrote was my instructional books. That the first one did really, really well. If I can get those kind of sales on this one, but even... It was over a 30-year period that this sold about 400,000.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's... Everybody went through that book. A lot of the drummers today that are big name drummers went through my book. Even Andrew Dice Clay.
Why?
He went through the book because he's a drummer.
So can anybody pick up the drums? Like, do you have to have rhythm to be a drummer?
Well, you have to have talent.
You
know,
you
I wouldn't say rhythm, you know, but talent. I was talking about this with somebody else. You know, you can have passion, you can have to want to do it, but if you don't have the talent, it's just not going to happen. I had a studio in Long Island in the 70s, and I had like 60 different students. Some of them went on to do well, but some students I could tell as soon as they started playing that they had no talent. You know, and I would say, don't waste your money.
You
know,
you
no matter what I teach you, you're not going to be able to get it.
When you say they had no talent, were they not able to follow along?
No, they just don't have the rhythm. They don't have the feel. They don't have the, you know, just the ability in their, within their body to do what needs to be done. You know, I mean, you got to have good timing. You know, like you have to have good timing. I was never taught timing. I have good timing. Matter of fact, we were just doing some editing on live stuff from Vanilla Fudge and Sweden Rock Festival. And there was one song we did, Dazed and Confused by Zeppelin. We did it our own way, and something happened in the middle, or towards the end of the song. And I said, well, something happened in the middle of the song. I said, why don't we take the end piece and the same piece and just insert it there? Now, that's the true test of good time. Because if you can take another part of the song 2 minutes later and insert it in the same song, especially after a whole middle section where it went to different tempos, it shows that you have good timing. And John, you know, guitar player, was his co-producer on that. He said, "Man, we listened to it today. It's unbelievable." He says, "Your timing is unbelievable, because that's part of it, and then being able to lock down a groove and stay there, and not lock down a groove and rush."
Mm-hmm.
You know,
why did you choose the drums, and what attracted you to this particular instrument?
Well, as I said in the book, you know, my cousin played the drums, and he wasn't a great drummer, but he had drums. Every time we Italian families got together, I banged on his drums. And then, you know, and being Italian, we went to Easter and Christmas and birthdays and this and that. So we were always, like, together. So every time I went to his house, I played his drums. Whenever I went home, I started banging on pots and pans and with spoons.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, my parents thought, well, maybe I was into it, and they bought me, like, a toy set of drums. And I broke those. After a while, I thought I was serious, so, you know, my birthday was near Christmas, so I used to get a bigger present for my birthday and Christmas because they were both together. So this one time, whenever, I don't even remember the year it was, I must have been 13 or 12, you know, like 1958, 59. They bought me a drum kit at the very first Sam Ash store in Brooklyn, and it cost $55.
A lot of money then.
Back then,
yeah.
It was a lot of money. And I put it down in the basement, in the cellar, not even a basement. It was a cellar with stone walls, and had pictures of my great-grandfather on the wall. It was spooky as hell. And, but my grandfather had a shoemaker shop down there. He was a shoemaker. And when I'd be down there playing and trying to practice, he'd be banging on his shoes, and he confused my timing. You know, it's pretty hard to play like boom, gotch, boom, when he's going bop, 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 you know. So a couple times I asked him to play in a different tempo, and bang it in a different tempo. But I was down there every day. After school, I was down there every day. And then we moved around the corner to a different house that actually had an enclosed porch. And I had that drum kit there, and I started playing gigs, you know. And then finally, you know, I was getting a good amount of gigs for a kid my age. I was probably 13, 14 years old, you know. And then I said to my parents, I need a better set of drums. It's really not doing it. So a guy up the block worked for Gretsch Drum Company, so he got me a cool Gretsch drum kit. I remember looking at the catalog going, I want that kit, you know. It was $325. But I had saved some money to give to my parents. And the same kind of thing, Christmas and birthday. But now I had a really professional drum set. But it wasn't complete. I didn't have a hi-hat. I didn't have a floor tom. I only had one cymbal stand, you know. But that's the actual drum set that I played on Vanilla Fudge, Keep Me Hanging On. You know, so.
Where is that? In a museum at this?
My brother ruined it.
Your brother?
My brother Vinny ruined it. You know, so I'd gotten this Ludwig Maple drum kit. It was made of wood. It's just some wood finish. And that kit was red sparkle. So he thought it'd be cool to take the red sparkle off it. And he ripped it all off and he wrecked the whole drum set. And that would have been a classic kit to have now.
Sure. Right? Who was an influence for you?
Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, those two. Gene Krupa, I did all the flashy stuff, you know, all the showmanship. And I remember the Gene Krupa story, the movie, that left such a heavy impression on me. It was like, you know, he's like living in Manhattan, he's driving in these big, beautiful cars, and all these fans, women fans are chasing him, you know. And I said, I want to do that, you know. That's what I want to do. And funny thing is, I achieved my boyhood dream of doing that, you know. But, I mean, not to the point where I was he used to sell out, you know, many shows at the Paramount Theater in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't do that, but I have played, you know, the big venues with my bands and did the solos and did everything. But, you know, it was like my boyhood dream was to become a famous drummer. And I did that.
He certainly did, and he's still doing it, living his dream. Carmine Appice's autobiography out now, Stick It, My Life of Sex, Drums, and rock and roll. And Carmine is touring this summer. He's in several locations, including Fort Collins, Colorado. He's going to be there for a few dates in July. He'll be in Liverpool, New York, Somerville, Massachusetts, Las Vegas, and San Diego later in August. Little thing to share with you, and a little secret I never told Carmine. When I was a little girl, I wanted that drum set, the red sparkle drum set that was in the window at my local music store in the Bronx. I would go by and wish for it and ask for it. And my dad said, girls don't play drums. So I never got the drums. Still want to play, though. Thanks for joining me. Thank you, Carmine Appice, for the interview and the opportunity at the Sheen Center. I'm Valerie Smaldone, spending time with you on America Weekend.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. How do you explain a parent's illness to a child? The best way and the science of it? Well, it comes from a good friend. Recently, one of my dear friends explained that she was going to the hospital for surgery, and she asked, Dr. Buff, how do I tell my children? Step one, honesty is the best policy. Children must be kept informed, but in small doses they can understand. Next, while you're in the hospital, make sure family routines are maintained. Bedtime at the same time, meal at the same points during the day, any deviation from routine screams something's wrong to a child. Finally, let the child care for you when you come home. Avoid them. They'll think something's up and worry about you more. What's the cheap psychological trick? Honesty, routine, caring. Works like chicken soup. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Fred left his car overnight at a reputable parking lot by the airport. It's located in a safe area, and the car was locked with the keys in a safe. But when Fred returned, his car had been stolen right out of an attended parking lot. Does the parking lot owner have to pay for Fred's car, or is he out of luck? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappylandAudio.com. That's HappylandAudio.com.
In court, the owner of the parking lot demonstrated that Fred's car had been locked, there had never been any previous thefts, and the property was not located in a high crime area. So Fred is out of luck and out of a car. And that's the final verdict.